we're talking, you and I are talking right now. I think it's a perfect time, and I reject pretty much your entire worldview.
Yeah.
So you say then in the next...
Which raises the interesting question, and I have to admit it's one I asked myself when your people called me, is why are you talking to me?
To demonstrate that a non-Christian worldview is utterly unworkable, that it's filled with contradictions, that it's self-refuting, and that it's hopeless. That's why we're talking.
Are you sure it isn't so that you can show everybody how clever you are?
If it turns out that I'm clever in the way that I do that, well, then I don't object to being clever. Maybe you think being clever is objectionable, but then again, it must be spiritual, sacred, and beautiful. So being clever, God must fully embody cleverness.
Okay.
You say here, then we'll leave the foreword if you'd like, that you give people your permission to believe what they like to believe.
Yeah.
And I notice that often when I debate people on this show, that they say things like, well, you have the right to believe that.
Yeah.
Or like you put it right in the foreword of your book. I could never even conceive of writing these words buried on page 340 of a book I wrote. But you put in the foreword that you give people permission to believe what they like.
You know, it's a really great way to get a reputation for great wisdom.
How?
Tell people that they have your permission to believe whatever they want.
They don't need your permission.
Well, exactly. They're going to believe it anyway.
Well,
so you might as well tell them they can.
Well, unless you think, and I believe this, Gregory Flood, I believe that you are not tolerant, that you are extremely intolerant. And one of the evidences of that is you make a statement in the beginning of your book that I could never dream of hiding anywhere in a book, that you give people permission to believe what they like. That's like saying you have the right to believe that. Why would we say such a thing? Only the thought police would even dream of saying that you have the right to think that or you have my permission to believe that.
Thought police? Where did that come from? Giving people freedom is thought police? I don't understand you.
Well, you say that spiritually we're all on equal footing.
Yes.
And so you and I are on equal footing, you believe?
Sure.
Isn't that a judgment call?
Saying we're equals? Where's the judgment in that?
I may be spiritually ahead of you.
There's no such thing.
There's no such thing. So why would anyone read A Guide to Enlightenment if there's no such thing as being more enlightened?
Because we express our level of godness, if you want to call it that, to differing degrees. We learn from each other. We find ways to have greater understanding of our relationship with God. That doesn't mean I'm better than you or you're better than me.
Have you learned to avoid people like me?
Well, I don't avoid them because I like people very much, and I was really looking forward to talking to you. I thought this is going to be a really interesting experience.
Yeah, yeah, hopefully it is. But you write that spiritually we're all on equal footing. Knowing this, we learn to avoid people who claim to operate on a special dispensation from God.
Right.
I mean, my whole...
Because there's no such thing as a special dispensation from God.
And you know that because you're enlightened?
I know it because of everything else I know. I lay it out in the book quite clearly, I think, that you know, given the nature of God, no, it can't play favorites. God, let me put it in a soundbite kind of way.
Yeah.
God is infinite love. Infinite love means no holding back, no entry requirements, no criticism. Infinite love is infinite. It pours down on you. God loved Mother Teresa. God loved Hitler. With equal intensity, there was no difference in the quality of love God gave to each of those people.
Did,
now, you and I...
Did God view the actions of Mother Teresa as just as beautiful as the actions of Adolf Hitler?
Well, you're asking me if God forms opinions, and the answer is no. An infinite being can't have opinions. It's infinite.
And you know that because... Explain to us.
Because of the way I see God working in my life and other people's lives.
And is it possible that you're wrong?
I'm always ready to be proven wrong.
Okay, so that if you're not enlightened...
Well, wait a minute. Let me ask you that right back at you. Is it possible you're wrong?
About what? About the...
About anything in your religious outlook.
I'll give you some things that it's not possible for me to be wrong about.
Okay, great.
Okay. By that chuckle, I infer that you admit it's possible you're wrong about your entire book.
No, by that chuckle, I was saying I'm not going to believe it probably, but you can try. So
okay.
Tell me things you can't be wrong about.
Well, my first question to you, I said, do you know that you are right in your major claims in the book? And you said yes. So you are claiming what I'm claiming at this point, but you just laughed at me.
Well, the major claims I make in the book, I mean, you and I make a lot of the same major claims. God exists. God is involved in our lives. I mean, that's pretty simple stuff.
Yeah, those are the kind of things that the devil believes.
The devil?
Yeah, the devil. But anyway, so you and I do have some agreement, just like in Scripture, Satan has some agreement about reality. There is a God, and he's somebody to be dealt with. Yeah, you and I both agree with that.
Yeah.
Okay, so you said, are there some things that I believe that can be wrong? So my answer to that is, there are some things I believe that cannot be wrong, and they include these. That there is an eternal, powerful, personal God. I cannot be wrong about that.
I'm with you on that.
Okay, I cannot be wrong. And so then we could pursue more understanding about God, and there are some things that I assert that I cannot be wrong about, that I am not wrong about. And there are other things that, yes, I wish. For years on the show, I've offered to take people to dinner or pay them $100 if they could convince me I'm wrong on a particular issue. And I still have that attitude. Okay, so I've got a question for you now from your book. You say, page 158, 100% of spirit is everywhere. Mm-hmm. If all of spirit is already present in an object, how can we put more in there? So to get back to the HIV virus, you believe that the HIV virus is a part of God?
Yes, to be sure.
And that God is fully in the HIV virus?
Yes, because it's alive.
It's not alive. Viruses, bacteria is alive. Protozoans are alive. Viruses are not alive. They're strings of DNA that can't reproduce.
They have a purpose and they do things. That sounds like alive to me.
Well, computer programs have a purpose and they do things, but they're not alive. In fact, a virus is very much like a piece of computer
code. I would disagree with that. I would venture to say a rock was alive. It's certainly intelligent.
Okay.
It takes a massive amount of intelligence to be a stone. All those billions of atoms holding themselves together in perfect coherence, that suggests intelligence.
Would you say it takes almost an infinite amount of intelligence to be a stone?
No.
Okay, just a
lot.
An enormous amount of intelligence.
To be sure.
Are you smarter than a stone?
I would hope so, yes.
You think you're smarter than a rock?
Yes.
Okay, even though a rock is very smart, have you devised the test?
I said the rock's existence suggests intelligence. I didn't say rocks were smart.
Oh, okay. I'm glad for that clarification because, yes, the Creator made the physical universe with matter, atoms, molecules, and it takes enormous intelligence and power to create that. So then we agree with that. When someone uses the restroom and they're done and they flush,
yeah.
Do you believe they're flushing your God down the toilet?
Well, yes, I suppose so.
And you do that on a daily basis, I guess.
I'm pretty sure everybody does.
And you revere and respect your God.
To be sure.
So that, in a sense, that's your throne of God, in a sense.
I have no idea where this is going.
Well, where it's going is what Scripture says in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul, that rejecting the Creator, they worship and serve the creation. And so would it be inappropriate for you to revere your God as you're flushing it down the toilet?
I don't think there's anything inappropriate at seeing God in everything.
Okay, so when a man molests a child, rapes a child, sodomizes a child, penetrates him, do you see God in that?
Well, yes, in that.
Gregory Flood, you are evil.
Yes.
You are evil. You are evil. You see God in a man molesting a child. You are evil, and ideas have consequences. And yeah. When people take your ideas and act upon them and hurt other people, you are responsible.
Well, first of all, nobody's responsible for what anybody else chooses.
No, we are responsible for the lies that we spread.
Well, that's what I would say to most Christians.
That's true. I would say that to Christians, too. We are responsible for the lies that we spread, only you deny it. You think those lies are beautiful, that they're sacred, that they're spiritual, that God is in those lies. You think God is...
I'm not sure I say anything quite like that in the book, Bob.
Well, you say right here, I could quote it from you, that... Yeah. You say, none of this is to deny the sanctity of anything. Rather, It affirms the sanctity of everything.
Yes.
And you go on in the same paragraph to use the words beautiful, spirit, and sacred. And so, to you, lies are sacred.
Well, in that people must be free to tell them. If we're not free to lie...
No, you're talking about freedom.
If we're not free to lie, Bob,
yeah.
Telling the truth would be meaningless.
You and I value freedom. I agree with you. But I'm not talking about freedom is a beautiful thing. I'm talking about the lies. You assert here that everything is sacred. Everything has sanctity.
Mm-hmm.
And so the molesting of a child, you said, is sacred, is beautiful.
And no, so I didn't say that. I said there was God in it. But
okay, God is in it. Is God beautiful?
We have free will.
Is God beautiful?
God is beautiful, but we have free will, and therefore we can choose to do things that are contrary to the nature of God, even grotesquely contrary to the nature of God.
Okay, so that when you say that everything has sanctity, and you say we find ourselves in a world where everything is spirit, capital S, everything is beautiful, everything is sacred. When I asked you, you say we find ourselves in a world where all these things are beautiful, sanctified, sacred. And I asked you, is HIV a beautiful thing? You said no. Is homophobia sacred and beautiful? You said no. And then I think you tried to pull a fast one on us, Gregory. You said, well, from God's perspective, but you are part of God.
Yes.
So that
part of.
So that statement that homophobia is sacred and beautiful, would that be a lie?
In that people can be free to embrace that idea if they choose.
Okay.
That's the beauty in it. But ideas that try to harm other people are going to have negative consequences.
Well, are they beautiful, though? Are those ideas beautiful?
Beautiful from a human perspective, no. From a divine perspective, it's fine.
So the lies like homophobia are beautiful from God's perspective.
Sure. God's,
well, let me
God
ask
is,
you this.
As I said earlier in this interview, God isn't disturbed by anything we do.
All right, so let me ask you this. What is the more significant perspective, the human one or the divine one?
Significant how?
Significant in that this is what we'd like to learn about. We'd like to be enlightened. We'd like
oh,
to
well,
learn.
Certainly you want. The whole purpose of any spiritual teaching is not to pull God down to where you are.
Okay, so if
to
I
lift you up to where God is.
So if I get to the point where I could see the beauty in homophobia, I'm now more enlightened and I'm looking at things from God's perspective.
If you saw the beauty in homophobia, you would also see the falsehood in it. One of the things
yeah.
about becoming about growing in your spiritual awareness is that you learn to love the world. As horrible as it is, as beastly as it can be, you understand that although the world isn't everything it should be by any means, it is everything it has to be right now. If you take the collective belief systems of everyone in the world
yeah.
and put them all together, this is the world you get. You
so,
want to have a better world, you got to give people better ideas to work from.
So better on whose judgment? Yours, a human judgment, or on a divine judgment? Better.
By the results, believe.
Well, somebody has to make a value judgment as to what results are better.
Yeah,
the Germans thought...
Well, people do that every day. That's
yeah,
why we have controversy.
The Germans...
Better another person thinks another thing.
The Germans thought it was a better result to slaughter millions of Jews.
Yes, they did.
So
that
I'm asking you, when you say if we fix... If people's beliefs become more enlightened, we have a better outcome. And then I asked, by what judgment? By human judgment or divine judgment?
Well, that would be by, well, not divine judgment, because as I said earlier, God doesn't make judgments, but
by
becoming
human
more in tune with the divine nature, we act in a more divine way, and that is going to mean more goodness, because God is infinite goodness.
And so God is infinite goodness, so does he judge when something is not good or when it is good?
God reacts. I think it's in... let me think now. The second half of the Liar's Prayer, called A Pack of Lies, Seven Dumb Ideas Generally Accepted as True. And in that, I have a chapter, it's a very short chapter, on what I call the law of compensation. And in it, I explain that the infinite responds to things instantaneously, to crimes. The punishment, if you want to call it that, it's really not a punishment, it's more of a mathematical reaction, is instantaneous, to give you an example of how that works. Suppose I steal your watch and say it's a $5,000 watch. Instantaneously, $5,000 in value is subtracted from somewhere else in my life. It may not be a monetary subtraction. I may lose a piece of my health or some of my peace of mind or my finances might start to fall apart. But the tabulation will be exact.
Yeah.
And the good news about that is
yeah.
that it means with God, your books are always closed.
And Gregory Flood, in this you are accurate, and of course you're borrowing this from the biblical concept of we will be judged and weighed in the balance, and men will be found wanting because we violate.
I don't think that's how most Christians think of that judgment. I think most Christians think they're going through life and God or some angel or something is up in the sky somewhere marking down every good thing they do and every bad thing they do, and it's all going to get weighed out at the end of their lives, and if the bad is heavier than the good, then you go to hell, and if the good's heavier than the bad, you go to heaven. I don't think they're talking about instantaneous divine response or reaction.
If most Christians believe that, then obviously they're not paying attention to what Jesus Christ said, because he said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. He says, those who do not believe are condemned already, but those who believe in the Son of God have everlasting life. So Jesus Christ certainly did not teach, if your good outweighs your bad, you go to heaven. He taught that if we trust in him, then our sins will be forgiven.
Yeah, but what did he mean by that, Bob? Is through me. Through what about him?
Well, his message...
Maybe it was through the example he was setting?
No, his message throughout... Now, maybe you're asserting that, but we have a Bible study on the Gospel of John, and we go through all four Gospels and pull out over 100 passages where Jesus Christ put himself at the center of his message. He said, you must love me more than your own family. You must live for me, honor me. You must ask things in my name. You must serve me. So he wasn't saying follow my example. He was saying worship me. I am the most important thing in your life. And so that's not some wishy-washy Buddha kind of let me give you an example. And that's why he said that he came to die, because being our creator, his life had sufficient value to pay for all of our sins.
Being our creator, so you think Jesus was God taking on a human form for a while?
That's Christianity, right?
Well, that's one version of it.
Well, actually, whether you're Protestant or Catholic, if you're Catholic, whether you're Eastern or Roman Catholic, it is fundamental Christianity, Orthodox Christianity, that Jesus Christ is God and that there's a Trinity.
Now, there's a lot of Christians who think Jesus was a person with a very strong connection to God and that he should be listened to and watched.
Well, certainly that rejects the entire tradition of Catholicism and Protestantism. And in any belief system, there are people who go off the fringe.
Tradition is poisonous, Bob.
How about the tradition of atheism? Is that poisonous?
I wouldn't call atheism a tradition, really.
Sure it is. The rejection of God is a tradition. You write in your book that you had a refreshing period of atheism.
That's true.
So that's a tradition. So is the tradition of atheism, is that poisonous?
Well, let's not have a debate about the meaning of the word tradition, but poisonous?
Yeah, some traditions could be false. Others are valid.
False and valid, but false doesn't... Well, actually, false does kind of mean poisonous, doesn't it? I would never... I don't bother contesting with other people's belief systems. You know, if I get up and say what I think, and somebody jumps up and says, no, you're totally wrong, and then they offer some not very good explanation of why I'm totally wrong, I say, okay, well, that's what you think, that's fine. I don't live to argue with people about this stuff.
Gregory Flood, your book, The Liar's Prayer, you have The Liar's Prayer printed on page 31 of the book, and, of course, that title is a takeoff on the Lord's Prayer. And in the Lord's Prayer...
I actually never thought of it that way. That's actually very good.
All
right. You're right. Maybe it is a take. I actually never thought of that as a...
All right. I wonder if your publisher did.
Got me.
Okay. So in the Lord's Prayer, I assert that he said what he meant. In your prayer, I have a couple questions for you. In the book, you frequently refer to God with a neuter pronoun, itself. You have a reason for doing that?
If God is an infinite being, it can't have a gender.
And that is because?
Because if it's male, then it's not female, and an infinite being can't be not something, so I say it.
You said an infinite being cannot be not something.
Yeah.
So you're saying it's not male. You contradict yourself on every page of your book.
Oh, well, well, that's a bit precious, isn't it, Bob?
No, it's an observation. You say an infinite being cannot be not something, yet...
Okay, well, then let's look at it another way. An infinite being would have to encompass all qualities, male and female, and you still get to the same point that referring to God as he.
So an infinite...
Accurate.
So an infinite being incorporates ugliness, wickedness, hatred.
It permits it, yes.
Oh, no, I didn't say it permits it. That would be freedom. And we both acknowledge that freedom is a tremendous value. But an infinite God encompasses ugliness, hatred.
Of course it does.
Cruelty. So your God is ugly, hateful, and cruel.
No, my God is pure and good and beautiful. But we have free will, which means we can choose to do things that are contrary to the nature of God, and that triggers the compensation effect I talked about earlier, and we are pushed back into divine order.
All right. I'd like to read three lines out of the Liar's Prayer, and they are toward the end. And it's, do you have plans for me? You're speaking to God.
Right.
Do you have plans for me? Well, if you do, what are they? If you don't tell me, no one else will. Why is it that you think no one will tell you?
Because it's no good for anyone else to tell you.
Well, you didn't
say... just another human being talking.
So you didn't say that it doesn't benefit. You said no one else will tell you.
Well, because we are fallible beings. If you're going to get information about God, and this is what the Liar's Prayer is all about, if you're going to get information from God, you got to ask God. And you've got to experience your answer, because that's the only undeniable information you can get. I mean, some other human being saying, oh, well, God's like this, and, well, blah, blah, blah. Mm. The radio's full of guys talking, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can say anything. But what can you know from what they say? Well, nothing. You know that that's what they think. But if you want to know it for yourself, you want to know God personally, in the Liar's Prayer, I show the reader how to start from scratch. You and this presence you think maybe you sense around you. What is that? So you talk to it. Ask it to tell you about itself. I don't see anything subversive in that.
If it tells you that it recognizes some things as evil and other things as beautiful, what do you say back?
What do you mean, what do I say back?
Well, if you are seeking God,
yeah,
and it is revealed to you that our conscience, the ability to identify right and wrong, flows from God.
Yes,
and that God sees something as right, like loving your neighbor, and other things as wrong, like molesting a child. If that's revealed to you, what do you say back?
Well, what can you say back? Say, oh, okay, that's what you're telling me.
That would be good. But in your book, you teach people, this Guide to Enlightenment, that don't believe that voice. Don't believe that voice, because to God, nothing would be evil or wrong or ugly.
Well, you're going to have to be more specific than that, because I don't remember putting that on a page anywhere.
Okay, to God, are some things not beautiful?
To God, some things are in keeping with its nature, some things are not in keeping with its nature. You keep trying to get God to make judgments, and an infinite being can't do that.
Okay, by your assertion, and that's earlier... I said that I'd like to get back to that point, and so you just brought it up again. So other than by your own assertion, I assume, in fact, you've said that people shouldn't believe things because Gregory Flood says them.
Right.
So by what authority do you know that God does not make judgments?
The only authority anybody has, my own personal experience.
Okay.
And what I offer people in the Liar's Prayer is one method after another to generate your own spiritual experiences so that you have actual evidence in front of you of the working of spirit in your life, and you can draw your own conclusions about what that spirit is, what your relationship is to it, and how it works through you.
Okay, so you state that you use reason to come to this conclusion.
Right.
And let me ask you this. When people are desperate,
yes,
does that tend to be when their reason is the most clear? When people are desperate?
It depends on the person. I become very clear-minded when I'm in a bad situation.
When you're desperate, you become very clear-minded.
Yeah.
All right. And that could be possible. You write in your book, leading into the Liar's Prayer, you say, wait until you're feeling desperate before you try this prayer.
Right.
And I submit that when people are desperate, they will grope out and cling to anything.
Yes, that's how religions get started.
That's very true. So people will grope out and cling to anything. So when you're setting someone up, saying, when you're desperate, try this.
That passage you're yanking out of a very long chapter was when I was talking about how people who have nice lives do not generally feel compelled to seek out higher spiritual truth. You know, their dance card is full, they've got enough money, their health is fine. You know, what would push them into that quest? Things like getting a terminal disease push you into a spiritual quest. I've certainly seen that happen over and over. It usually takes some big disturbance of your daily routine for you to start asking the necessary questions.
In this chapter, you refer to spiritual accuracy. You speak of divine desperation,
right.
And I'd like to quote that guideline number 4. You say, there is no spiritual truth except that which the individual discovers in his own consciousness and proves by its application in his life.
Right.
So there is no spiritual truth except if someone goes through this process. So when people go through this process and come up with contradictory conclusions, like someone ends up believing that it is good to kidnap men, rape them, and eat them, like Jeffrey Dahmer did, then that's a valid spiritual truth that he's developed for himself?
I don't see how it would be possible to come to that conclusion.
Well, he's investigating spiritual truth for himself. It's his own discovery. There is no spiritual truth that can deny his spiritual truth, right? Could one spiritual truth disprove another? Is that possible?
I said at the beginning of this interview, I'm always ready to be proven wrong. And anybody can get a false idea in their head.
All right. And it's false because?
Because it is contrary to the nature of God and therefore does damage.
Okay, so when somebody says that the child molester, from God's perspective, is a beautiful and sacred thing, that could be wrong.
Well, I'm open to you proving me it's wrong.
Let me ask you this. I'll appeal to your conscience that God put in you. Is there a part of you that hopes that it's wrong when a man molests a child, that God does not see that as a beautiful thing?
Well, I don't see it as a beautiful thing. I see it as probably the most monstrous crime a person is capable of committing.
Yeah, and so I'm asking you, is there a small voice within you that hopes that God sees it as an ugly thing, a monstrous thing? Is there a part of you that hopes that?
I don't see how that's possible. Not the God I know.
Okay, so the God you know sees the molesting of children and people coming down with HIV as beautiful things.
Well, again, you're trying to get God to make value judgments. It doesn't do that. It just sees that that's what's happening.
Say that God sees everything as beautiful except when I point out a specific, and then you deny that God sees anything as beautiful.
Oh, I didn't follow that sentence at all.
Okay. It's on tape. We could go back. All right. So, Gregory, would you like to make final observations or...
Yeah, you know, I did a call-in show about a month and a half ago in Jackson, Tennessee. Oh, my God. I now know there is a Bible Belt because I have been spanked with it. You cannot believe the angry people calling up to talk to me. They told me later that when I started expressing my ideas, the switchboard just lit up. And at the end of it, one of the interviewer's producer came in, because he's a big Christian guy. The interviewer wasn't so much, but the producer was very right-wing. And he said, what do you value? What's important to you? Because he thought I was kind of saying it's all just a big moral free-for-all, which I certainly don't say. And I said, well, I value the God within people because I can see it. I value its freedom to express its way any way it chooses to do, as long as it's not hurting anybody else. And I value the truth, as I can understand it to the best of my ability. Those are the things I value. And they were very dissatisfied with that.
Gregory Flood, a few months back, I had an interview with someone called the Infidel Guy. He's on ABC's Wife Swap. They've rerun his episode a few times. His name is Reginald Finley. And we had an interview. In fact, we followed up. We ended up doing 4 hours. And my time with him was way more pleasant, and there was a reason to it, I think. And that's because in Scripture, Jesus says, I would rather you be hot or cold. If you are lukewarm, I will spit you out of my mouth. And Gregory Flood, you assert that there is a God. There is a God, but when he looks on a man who molests a child, when he looks on the slaughter of the innocent, that he makes no judgment call about that.
Right.
And I assert that that is utter wickedness, and that ideas have consequences, and that any person who takes advice from you will become a danger to themselves, they'll hurt others, and they'll hurt God. And
that is not the experience of people who listen to me.
Well, how about on the cover of your book? It says, from the author of I'm Looking for Mr. Right, But I'll Settle for Mr. Right Away. So that title means?
Oh, it was just a jokey title I thought would get people to pick up and look at the book. It was actually a book on the spiritual healing of AIDS, which I wrote during the height of the epidemic in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm. And as far as men using other men for self-gratification and then not even knowing their name or passing them on for another 100 guys to use the same guy and toss him away, is that something that your enlightenment has brought you to correct, to rebuke?
The very idea that the sublime and infinite intelligence that created and maintains this universe gives a hoot what anyone's doing in their bedroom is so ridiculous, it makes steam pour out of my ears. But as far as the example you just gave, I would say that the person you described was using their sexuality very unintelligently and very self-destructively. But there's nothing in what I teach that would prohibit anyone from thoroughly enjoying their sexuality, provided they're not doing any damage with it.
But if someone is using someone else for pure self-gratification, let's say it's a gift giver or a bug seeker, right? And some young guy is been drinking in San Francisco, and he announces to another guy that he hopes someday to be HIV positive. And the guy says, well, I am, and they decide to have unprotected sex.
Right, that's how that happens.
Yeah, and so God does not make a judgment call about that.
No.
No. So that's, from God's perspective, that's no different than loving your neighbor.
From God's perspective, it's a choice.
Of course it's a choice. We agree with that. But
well,
you're
that's
saying,
all God sees you doing is making a choice. God doesn't perceive that.
Yeah.
You're going to do damage to yourself, because God knows you're an eternal being on an eternal unfoldment of your awareness that only your body can get hurt, and that's not all that important.
And your soul can't get hurt, your soul spirit, your
Absolutely
emotion,
not.
Your heart?
I mean, what you call the soul, I call it consciousness, but it is the part of you that is pure and perfect and completely untouched by anything that happens in this world.
So that when someone gets hurt because they've been betrayed, does that hurt their body or their consciousness?
It hurts their feelings.
Does it hurt their body or their consciousness?
Oh, I don't know. That's an interesting question. I'd have to go do some research on the Internet to see what the physiological effects of betrayal are.
Well, even before we had the Internet, it doesn't hurt your skin. It doesn't hurt your bones.
Does it not?
It doesn't. It doesn't. There could be secondary. People could commit suicide when they've been betrayed. So there are secondary ramifications.
Yeah, but it can make you sick to your stomach. And
there are secondary ramifications. But atoms and molecules, they don't have intelligence like a stone. They're made with intelligence, but they don't have emotion. They don't have envy or bitterness. They're matter. But it is the intellect, the consciousness, what Scripture calls the soul and the spirit. This is where you hurt people more significantly than when you hurt their body.
I think you are confusing spirit with psychology. You can hurt people's feelings, their perception of themselves, their expectations in the world, but none of that has anything to do with your pure spirit that's in the center of you.
So when you betray someone's love and trust, that doesn't really hurt that person.
It hurts them to the degree that they let it hurt them. Hurt you.
Just the superficial. It's just superficial.
Well, I mean, it may be superficial or it may not.
It depends on how
the individual who's being betrayed reacts to it.
So you said,
if they are an aware person,
all right,
they might look at the betrayer and understand that, you know, they couldn't have done anything but what they did, that it hurts my feelings that you did that to me, but I understand who you are. And then what it would always come down to with me, if I were betrayed, I mean, let's get this on a personal level instead of hypothetical. If I would betray it, I would always come back to the question of what was in my thought, my belief system, that put me in a position to be betrayed like that. It would always come back to me.
And is it possible to hurt one another's consciousness?
That's a
simple question. It's a simple question.
No, I don't even know how to answer that question.
Okay.
Hurt your consciousness? No, I would say not. It is possible to hurt someone's feelings.
Okay, so it's rather superficial when we hurt one another. It's not eternal. It's not eternal. It's just sort of physical.
Yeah.
And okay, well, Gregory Flood
said, "Time heals all wounds. Time wounds all heals."
And that, of course, is false. And so, okay, so
no, it isn't.
Yeah, it is. Time doesn't heal all wounds.
No, but time does wound all heals.
That's just trivial make believe kid stuff.
No, it's true.
Yeah. Okay.
Law of compensation.
All right. The website is liarsprayer.com.
People from listening, I can't imagine your audience is chomping at the bit to buy my book, but the website itself is an interesting read, and there's a free download that gives you big sections from the book you can check out, and it also has passages from other spiritual teachings, including Bible passages with my perhaps unorthodox interpretation of them.
Right.
So it's a fun place to go.
All right. Well, thank you for your time, Gregory Flood.
It was my pleasure.
All right. I appreciate that. The book is The Liar's Prayer, A Grouch's Guide to Enlightenment, and the website liarsprayer.com. As I said to Gregory, what a difference with our 4 hours that we spent with Reginald Finley, the infidel guy. And I believe the difference, I could be wrong, I'm not infallible, and this is a statement about something that might be hard to quantify, but I believe the difference is because of how the Lord stated in the book of Revelation that I'd rather you be hot or cold. If you are lukewarm, I will spit you out of my mouth. And there are few things in life as disgusting and distasteful as someone who says that when God sees a man hurting a child, that that does not anger him, that he doesn't judge that that is wrong. And so it was an entirely distasteful interview with Gregory Flood, but hopefully it exposed the reality that if you try to build a non-Christian worldview, you will trip over yourself on almost every sentence, because when you deny the Christian God, there is no rationality that holds up in the world. There is none. And so that was perhaps an illustration of that.